I'm Dan.
And I'm Jordan.
And this is the Money Basics Podcast.
All right, everybody, how's it going? Good? So today is kind of a random episode. I'm just getting really into it, the podcast that is, and the Money Basics stuff, to be honest. We had a pretty cool business meeting today, and I'm all fueled up with BioSteel and Rockstar right now. So
and you got a cold brew cappuccino, whatever you got.
Oh yeah, that too. Yeah, so I'm caffeine fueled and ready to go. So today's kind of a little bit all over the place, but you know, we're just gonna roll with it. I got a few things that have come up that I want to talk about, and I just sort of mentioned our little business meeting, so I actually want to talk about that a little bit. So like our first official business meeting today, man, I felt pretty good about that.
Yeah. I've had one before, so.
That's true. So I'm a little biased in this one.
But you missed out on that one. You were too busy, too cool.
That's true. Yeah. So anyway, some exciting things coming up down the pipe, I think. I'm going to do some collaboration work with Dylan LaSalle and his mortgage broker stuff. We're going to get into some topics around home buying, mortgages, and the first home savings account, I think, is FHSA, I think.
FHSA, the new account. Whatever that stands for. Haven't done my research on that yet.
Yeah, so keep an eye out for that. Article, sounds like, and then a podcast episode. We'll have him on as a guest in the near future.
We'll see how it shakes out, but preliminary talks are kind of sort of throwing those ideas around. So stay tuned, more to come. We'll see how it shapes up.
Nice. So in the business meeting today, we talked about a few things that I sort of thought of. So here I am. I had an episode pre-planned in the books in terms of a rough script written out. But Mel really got into liking the last episode she did, and she wants to talk again.
So she felt good about it. That's good. I was wondering how she would feel after the fact.
So she, before I even shared with her the script idea that I had for the next one, or the one that I had proposed to do today, she said she wanted to be a part of it, and then I told her what I wanted to talk about, and she said that'd be really interesting. Well, her response originally was, I have more to say. And I was like, great. And then I told her what the script was, and she's like, that's kind of part of what I wanted to talk about. So we'll save her for another guest episode.
Yeah,
so
don't talk about all her stuff without her.
No, definitely not. So I wrote up a new one literally on my drive here to meet with you. Just a bunch of stuff that I've been thinking about, and that stuff's been going around. So we talked about a few times on the episode that we're involved, more me than you, but on the social media app Blossom.
Mm-hmm.
And someone had posted something recently that piqued my interest because I also had read an article sort of in the same ballpark. So the person booked. Cool. We are looking at a rabbit right now, and it's coming towards us.
Oh God, run! People are like, what's going on? I gotta cut some of this out.
All right, so the Blossom person posted something about dream jobs, basically, and then the conversation in the comments was about, are you in your dream job now? What is your dream job? And the person said that they had been working in their field for 4 years and were already kind of sort of sick of it. And anyway, it's a long story, but it got me thinking about, like, what is my dream job? And am I doing my dream job right now? And I don't know if I thought about that specifically in a long time. And I don't really know why. I think it's just because my career just kind of evolved into what I'm doing now. And can I confidently say I'm doing my dream job? No. But am I doing something that I enjoy? Yes. But if I had the choice, like, I could literally retire. If I was able to, I would retire today to do things that I wanted to do other than what I'm doing at work. It's not to say that I don't like what I do, but what are your thoughts around that?
Yeah, you know what? Dream job is a tough word for me. I did get my dream job. At one point, it was my dream job, and I achieved that, and that was super cool for a long time. And then it kind of, you know, when you do one thing for long enough, you start looking for other challenges, I guess, or just a shake up, a change. And then, you know, as I get older and wiser, I realize that I don't think there's such a thing for me as a dream job. I find there's so many very interesting, very cool things out there in the world. A lot of things I just want to, like, learn about and sink my teeth into and, like, just explore with and try. Like, Like, I'm inspired by everything. I drive by, like, one of those giant windmills on the side of the road, like the big turbine, like, wind energy things.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's so cool. I wish I knew a lot about how that worked. You know, so, like, I could see myself, like, going down that rabbit hole. When we were in Portugal, I, like, see all these people, like, farming. I'm like, man, I want to learn how to farm. I want to, like, grow a garden and, like, you know. I don't know. I just find there's all these cool little things that I could get behind. And, if I had millions and millions of dollars, I would not be doing the job that I'm doing now. I'd be attacking all of these cool interests for, like, you know, a year here, a year there, and just, you know, broadening my horizons. It's not that I don't like my job. I do like my job. It's just there's a lot out there to like and explore and see and find out and learn, you know? So
yeah,
that's kind of where I sit on it.
Yeah, I'm definitely of a different opinion, but that's interesting.
I mean, not to say that that's...
there's anything wrong with that. I think that's really cool. But, yeah, I don't know. I could see myself being quite busy if I didn't have my job at all and still making the same income. With just, like off the top of my head right now, I could finish building the sandbox. I could, like, take care of my lawn better.
Dude, a week of vacation, you could figure that out. I don't think you need to be retired.
But then, to go beyond that, like, I could just take care of stuff that I need to take care of. But also, like, I could just simply use my bike more often. I could go, like, maybe exercise a little more. Maybe get into more sports. Like, we went to the park around my house recently because my kids are in sports. And they added, like, I think they're putting a basketball court in. There's a volleyball court there. They got tennis courts. Like, I'd get into all of that. Like, I just don't have time. I mean, I guess I could, but it's not, at the end of the day, it's not something I'm like, I'm going to go play tennis, you know? Like, I just want to sleep, honestly. Like, I'm so tired. But anyway, just some thoughts. So, moving on. But it kind of ties into an article I read earlier this week. So we are huge fans of the TLDR newsletter from, well, Simple.
Yeah.
What does that stand for?
Too long, didn't read.
Thank you. I should have looked that up. I wanted to and I forgot. Okay, so it's a great newsletter. This week's episode or article was in a little bit different format, and they transparently said that in the beginning, and it was cool. They broke down a bunch of stuff, including the top 10 like CEOs. I forget what the topic was, but anyway, one of my favorite CEOs was featured in one of the articles. It was like a article within an article, so you had to like expand it. Anyway, I'll get into that in a minute, but the main article that came out that I read was in regards to kind of, well, I don't remember the title, but it was around millennials and burnout and all that kind of stuff. In terms of
burnout is real.
Okay, so hear me out. I'll summarize the article. So it basically said that, so, and then I'll start with what is a millennial? So millennial is anyone that's born between 1982 and 1996.
Oh, I don't know the definition of that.
Anyway, I checked it out and it was something like that. So anyway.
I feel like prior generations just called everyone a millennial.
Yes, 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 yes. I agree with that. But definition is what I'm trying to get at is you and I are millennials. We're within the range.
Okay.
Okay. So we'll just give you a ballpark like 30-year-olds-ish. Okay. And then some, you know, there's obviously a range. But basically it was saying that there's like burnout with work and how the work culture has changed from previous generations, and you know, work-life balance is kind of more of a prominent topic, more or less. But what I didn't like about this article is that it kind of victimized the millennial. And there was something, I liked the article and I agreed with it, but I found that like playing the victim card wasn't cool. Because in my eyes, the way I see it is, I feel like, and this ties into work ethic, I feel like people are coming out of school, because the article said that people expect to come out of school because they were told to go and get a degree or whatever, and then they're going to get out and have a high-paying job and be able to buy a house and then live happily ever after is basically like a very quick summary. And that's just not reality. And I feel like people are coming out and expecting kind of that and not realizing that, at least in my experience and anyone that I've seen and in my field and profession, and I'm kind of seeing it with you being transparent about your profession, is that like you don't just walk into a position and get all the perks. Like, that is built and earned and you have to work for it, right?
Yep.
And I felt like the article was taking that away. I feel like the article was saying, hey, this is like a societal problem. It's a generational problem. And, you know, everyone's getting burned out and the expectation's not the reality, and it seemed like they were sort of saying it kind of should be, and I don't agree with that.
I think there's certainly a shifting work kind of employer-employee dynamic, and I don't think there's necessarily a whole lot wrong with that. I think choosing an opinion on that, like whether that's right or wrong, like that's not the right way to play this. And I had a debate with a colleague, not somebody from my organization, but from a sort of a parallel organization that I collaborate with occasionally. And this person had a role in the hiring process of the branch that they work for. And historically, this branch, this job, that the position that they hired for, was a very like sought after position. There was huge competition for it. Line up out the door. Everyone wants a job. So huge competition, meaning when there's tons of people to fill a position and there's only a couple of jobs, well, that puts a lot of power in the employer's hand, right? So they can set certain expectations. And recently that has shifted hard, where the employer is struggling to fill positions. There's not even enough people applying to fill the positions. So this person was complaining that they would have like a brand new employee just get the job offer. And, you know, they'd be like, okay, you're starting, for example, May 1st. And then the new employee would say, well, I'll accept the job, but I need all of May off because I already have a vacation plan with my family, whatever. And then the employer would be like, well, no, that's not how this works. And they'd get all mad and they wouldn't allow that person to take the job because they have to be there for their probationary period, whatever. So this person was telling me this and they were getting very mad about it. Like, people don't want to work. There's no work ethic, yada, yada, yada. And all I thought was, okay, whether I agree with you or not is irrelevant. Maybe it's time you as an organization need to shift your policies and your strategy. You can complain about how, whether that's fair or not fair. You can complain all you want, but the fact is you need positions filled and you're being so choosy that you're not filling these positions. So like, you can be a dinosaur and complain until you go extinct, or you can evolve. You know what I mean? Like, whether you personally agree with it or not, complaining about it's not going to fix anything.
Right.
So to an extent, I think that some employers do need to evolve. But I also do sympathize with, you know, the dynamic has shifted in a lot of professions, and I see it in mine, not quite to that extent. But there's a bit more entitlement than historically you would have seen. And it can be frustrating at times. So I think employers need to do the best they can to accommodate people, especially when you're like one of these jobs that's having a hard time filling positions, which there's more and more of these, right? Like healthcare, for example, slammed. A lot of branches of healthcare can't fill staff, they can't staff positions. So it's like beggars can't be choosers. Like, maybe these places that can't get the bodies to fill the roles need to be more accommodating, even if it hurts their soul to do it. Like, you got to do what you got to do. But spots where, you know, maybe lots of people are applying and you've got all kinds of people applying for a couple of jobs, then maybe you can be a bit more choosy. I don't know.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. But I think that like people, I don't know. I'm not sure what the solution or problem really is. I just know like I'm seeing it a lot more in my role now because of the job I'm doing now compared to what I was doing before. But even before, like, I've worked some pretty crappy jobs, like hardworking jobs, lower-ish paying jobs. And like, sure, I griped and complained as much as the next person did, but I feel like maybe the job market is so plentiful right now that people just aren't needing to grind as much.
That's 100%.
They haven't seen bad, you know what I mean? And they get into these decent jobs, right? And then they complain because they don't know any better, right? They don't have the experience. Maybe, I don't know. I'm speculating here. It's my opinion, but I don't know. But stuff like that. I just noticed that. And I don't know, like, maybe I was like that when I was younger too. Like, I really can't remember. I feel like, you know, obviously I had my jobs where I was complete shit, and I'm sure people wanted to fire me. I never actually got fired, but I don't know. I could have, maybe, because I didn't really care about certain jobs when I was quite younger. But I feel like when I got a little more serious about my career, that like I did have the work ethic and I did work as much as I could, and I busted my butt. And I feel like some of that shows, because like now of the position I'm in now, like it took me 12 years. I'm on my 13th year. like, I busted my butt to get here, you know? And I feel like the people that I'm directly working with, I don't know, like, I don't want to say too much information, but I feel like the expectation is maybe not necessarily my level or someone above me's level as an entry level, but I feel like, yeah, I don't know, the work ethic just seems to be different.
Yeah, and I think that is a direct result of the current environment of, like, jobs versus people applying for these jobs. So certainly if jobs are plentiful, people don't care anymore. They don't value their job that much, because if they lose it, there's other jobs. They'll just find it, right?
Yeah.
So eventually that balance will likely shift back to the way it was. Who knows if that's 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. But I think, you know, it's the pendulum swings, and this is probably a cycle that's happened for many, many, many years.
Yeah.
But yeah, as a result of this cycle and where we are in it, I do think you will see, generally speaking, a decline in the work ethic. But and that's not necessarily wrong, right? Like, if I work at for a job that where the managers don't appreciate me, they abuse me, they give me an unrealistic workload, they don't pay me very much, they don't accommodate anything that I need, you know, why should I give them 110% if they're not going to give me 110%? Mm-hmm. So I agree with that to a certain extent. But the flip side of that is, you know, if you've got a whole generation, and this is we're generalizing here just to make a point, but you've got a whole generation of employees who don't know how to work hard because they've never had one of these crappy jobs, they've never worked hard, well, they're likely going to be the lower performers their whole life until they decide to change, versus the people who do have work ethic will rise through the ranks, right? So it's like, you know, you can drag your ass your whole career if you want, but there might be somebody else who comes up after you, gets hired later than you and busts their ass, and they end up being your boss. So, I mean, if you're cool with that, that's fine. But I mean, I think you're going to see a lot of that. You're going to separate the workers from the people who just are there just to collect a paycheck and they don't care about anything.
That's a good point. That's been my experience. Okay. So a couple ways I want to branch off here, and I'm going to pick one. So we talked about employers being outside the box thinkers and being roughly accommodating for employees. So to sort of touch back on me reading this Wealthsimple article and about one of my favorite CEOs, oh my God, Rania Llewellyn, anyway, it doesn't matter. She's the CEO of Laurentian Bank, okay? The reason I bring her up is because, so Laurentian Bank, as a quick education for our audience, is one of the Canada's biggest six banks, but they're on the smallest of the big six.
They're the biggest six, are they?
I think so.
You sure?
I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Well, name them. Name them now. TD, Scotia Bank.
TD, Scotia, RBC, CIBC.
Royal Bank?
I think I said that.
Scotia Bank?
I already said Scotia.
National Bank?
I think National's like number six. Who's the other big one that I just missed? BMO.
BMO, right.
Yeah.
So Laurentian Bank would be probably like number six or seven on the list. Anyway, okay. Whatever. They're one of the, on the small end of the bigger banks, they are pretty small.
Compared to the big ones.
Exactly, compared to the big ones. But they're still big enough. And so when I started investing in them, they had just changed CEO to their new one, which is Rania. And she is, piqued my interest in her originally was that, just my own pure opinion, speculation is that she's a woman. Which in the banking sector, I mean, in many high-level positions in any company, how often do you see a woman as a CEO? More men than women.
Yeah, no, it's true, generally. By a long shot.
But especially in the banking sector. And she's also an immigrant. She immigrated to Canada, like, when she was in her preteens, something like that. Like, I think 10, 11, 12 years old. She's of Jordanian and Egyptian descent. If I have that wrong, I'm very apologetic about it, but I'm pretty sure that's accurate because I was reading the article and I listened to her interview.
Should have fact checked it. She's probably listening right now.
Yeah, probably. Anyway, I'm pretty sure. I'm 99% confident that's what it is. But anyway, so I thought, like, here's a person, and then now I've learned even more about her. I knew a little bit of it, but now I know that she started working when she was in college, university, when she was in Canada, working at Tim Hortons as a cashier, basically, or Tim Hortons, you know, worker. Started working as a bank teller at Scotia Bank. Had a random encounter with one of the higher ups at Scotia. Talked him into giving her a higher-ish job out of the teller sector, basically. And basically worked her way up the ranks, and all of a sudden, you know, gets over to Laurentian Bank and becomes the CEO. So, like, and then in all of that, she got her bachelor's degree and an MBA. So like super intelligent person, super hardworking person running through the ranks and all that kind of stuff. So that's a quick rundown of the Laurentian Bank and CEO. Now, the reason I'm talking about the outside the box thinking management is because one of the things Laurentian Bank has done is they've changed their culture around work. And since COVID and the whole work from home being pretty popular, they have a policy they've implemented saying work from home first. So they've shifted a lot of their employee culture to more accommodating. So work from home was one of the procedures or things they put in place. Half day Fridays or days off on Fridays they put in place, and employees get their birthdays off. So, you know, among other things, but it's interesting we're talking about this and they've implemented some of those strategies, and I'm sure other companies are doing that as well on the accommodating side of employees, probably in part of what we're talking about, right?
Well, yeah, I think like these are a lot of innovative ideas that I think you're going to see a lot of companies shifting to. Not all of them, but the smarter companies are going to start shifting to some of these. Like there's been studies, I think it was like Finland or something, or I don't know, one of those like northern European countries had done a study on the 4-day work week, and they show like dramatic rises in productivity over a 5-day work week. So like that Friday's off or Friday half days, like that's backed by some research. I couldn't say for sure how much research.
And I should clarify, Laurentian Bank doesn't give their employees every Friday off all year. They do it in the summertime.
Mm. Well, I wouldn't expect there'd be a huge drop in productivity. And I say that at my work too. It's like, you know, I'm there for over 9 hours a day, every day. I do not work at 100 miles per hour for 9 hours. You know what I mean? Like the amount of time that I have to be on location, if there's certain roles where I do have to be there and put the time in, there's just no way around. It's just the nature of the work. But there's other times where I'm working on a project. And, you know, I've said this to my boss before, if you want me to work on this project, like I could work incredibly focused for like 2 or 3 hours a day, and that's it. That's all the like incredible focus I'll be able to muster. And then for the rest, I'm on cruise control because I've just burnt myself out, you know, and I'm still working. I can still do tasks, but the critical, like the most efficient, effective, creative work occurs in like 2 or 3 hour blocks of extreme focus. So honestly, if I was only doing project work, which is just not the nature of my job, but if I was, like a 40-hour work week wouldn't really make sense when we're talking about efficiency. You know what I mean? And I always thought if I was a manager and I had people who strictly worked on that type of project work, it would be more efficient to pay them for the work and not for the hours. Like accomplish this task and at the end of it, I'll pay you $4,000. I mean, depending on what the task is and how long it takes. But like, let's just say hypothetically, I'll give you $4,000 to complete this task. I do not care how you do it, how you structure it, how long you take, just make it happen. Cause that's what the task is worth for me. Well, then you'll get your employees working as hard as possible to get that task done. And like, if they get it done in like 6 hours and you pay them $4,000, as long as the end result is what you were looking for, what do you care?
Right. Yeah, but that's in theory. Like
in theory.
And so, like, you know, I feel like a lot of people take advantage of that. Or they would dog it and wait last minute, or, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. There's a lot of variables, but...
Well, that's it. But in theory, like, that would be an efficient way. So what I'm saying is, if you have a for this bank, for example, you're in the summer, you got Fridays off, let's say. I feel like if you've got a really happy group of employees who are motivated, they're happy to show up to work, morale is high, I feel like you'll get more out of them in those 4 days than if they were miserable.
Yeah.
And, you know, just showing up because they had to for 5 days.
Yeah, yeah.
I wouldn't expect to see a huge drop in efficiency.
Right, right. Okay, so shifting the gears a little bit off of that topic. I want to build on that just for a second. So it goes back to what we were talking about work ethic and all that kind of stuff is, you know, anyone's number one wealth building tool is your income, right? And if you work hard and you go up the ranks, you're going to make more money, and that's sort of the point. Now, of course, you want to find balance. Work-life balance is important, but you know, it's things are earned, right? And you do have to put the work in to get the benefits,
mm-hmm.
and that in all encompassing aspects. And I feel like everybody wants everything now, and that, you know, that goes into all the different things. But anyway, that's all I have to say about that. So, shifting it a little bit. I want to sort of focus on some of our social media stuff and one of my acquaintances that I have. So our good old buddy Jared, we talked about him in the last podcast, I forget why, but he had posted something on Facebook about how he went out and did his own yard work because somebody wanted like $80 an hour to do his yard work. So he gathered his kids and did his own yard
work. My man.
And he tagged me in it, but Money Basics in it. And he was like, they'd be proud, or I forget what it was.
Of course. That's amazing.
But I laughed. It was good. So it was a good time.
Man, for stuff like that, like, it's a very simple mathematical equation. It's like, what is your time worth? Okay. So for people, I mean, if you got all the time in the world, then like that becomes less important. But like you and I, we were always complaining lately about how busy we are, how we don't have any time. Like we barely have time to keep this Money Basics thing afloat. But we make it work. We struggle through and we find time. We make it work. But when you're that busy, or there's people who are busier than us, you have to like assign a dollar value to your time. And, you know, depending on what your earnings are, what, you know, whatever your normal rate of pay is, or if you have a business, whatever your income is, like, imagine I made on average, like I was some hotshot and I made like $3,000 an hour. Well, if somebody said, I'll do your yard work, which is going to take several hours, I'll do your yard work for $80 an hour. Well, it would make that, that's a great investment because that frees me up to make $3,000 an hour.
Yeah.
But on the flip side of that, if you make like $13 an hour, you know, and somebody wants $80 an hour to do a few hours of yard work, and time is a commodity here, it might make sense for you to say, hit the road, Jack, I'll take care of this, right?
Yeah.
And that's why I do a lot of things around my house too. Like, there's many tasks that I will just do myself because, you know, the people just want outrageous amounts of money for relatively simple tasks that I can handle. And often it makes sense for me to just do it myself.
Yeah.
But there are some times where there's like a skill that I do not possess or that I could maybe learn, but it would take a lot of effort. And I just think I could learn and spend, you know, a dozen hours learning the skill and doing the task, and being very frustrated, and the job will just be mediocre at best. Or I could do the thing that I'm good at and get paid money to do it, and then pass some of that money on to the guy to do the task that I'd have to learn. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like the example is my garage door was broken not that long ago, and it was going to be like a $400 fix. And I was like, oh, looking at all this stuff, like do it yourself, how I could fix this thing. And then I thought I had an overtime opportunity coming up where I would work, and, you know, over this long period of work that I had lined up, I would have made much more than what it would cost me to fix this, to pay the guy to fix my door. So I thought, there's a good trade. I'll go do what I'm good at and pass some of that money on to the guy who fixes my garage door because he's good at that. That's a good trade, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not always. So yeah, doing your own yard work for the equivalent value of $80 an hour, that to me sounds like a very good trade.
Yeah. Yeah, and I want to talk about work ethic a little bit too around that. And it brings me back to the article I was reading about the millennials and the victimization. That was the other thing that came up for me. It didn't come up in the article because it was talking about how school, post-secondary education, I guess at one time in Canada was subsidized. The government paid for a good portion of it, and people used to, I guess in the 70s and 80s, only have to pay like a couple thousand dollars for school as opposed to what it is now. Now, obviously, times were different then, money was worth, you know, there's a difference in time there that's significant, but nonetheless, there was a portion of school that was paid, and it brought me to thinking about spending habits, because we know that most people, 70-80% of the population in North America, are paycheck to paycheck. The spending habits are rampant. People splurge on everything. And so I'm thinking, okay, we're victimizing people who don't have any work ethic that are buying everything under the sun and making payments on everything, right? And that was sort of part of it. So it brought me to something that came up. One of my acquaintances talked to me, and he was talking about how he wanted to talk to his kids about investing and all that kind of stuff, because him and I have been learning kind of since 3 years ago now. And he says, I'm having a hard time teaching my kids about investing. And he says it drives him nuts because we were talking about homes and buying houses and all that kind of stuff, and they want to buy a house. So he said, yeah, he says, you know, my kids can't seem to save money for a down payment of a house. And he's got a little bit of money tucked away, and they keep asking him for a loan to buy a house. But he's like, I would be more inclined. He's like, I love my kids, but like, I want to teach them something here. He's like, I would be more inclined to lend them money to buy for a down payment on their house if they hadn't just bought a $10,000 4-wheeler and a $50,000 truck and some other vehicle. He says they got three vehicles in the driveway that could have equated to the down payment of their house. Yeah. And he's making a point to not lend them the money because he's like, yeah, I've been telling you for 3 years, at least 3 years now, that like, you know, it's not like they can't afford it, right? So I thought that was like kind of was an interesting story.
I agree with them 100%. I would not lend, even my own child, I would not lend if they were irresponsible spending money like that. Because that's what that is. That's irresponsible mismanagement of money. And they're just looking for a bailout from mommy and daddy to, you know, fix the problems for them. So by doing that, you're doing them a disservice. You're not teaching them anything, and you're not allowing them to learn lessons. And we've talked about this before, like you can give someone knowledge, but wisdom is earned, right? Mm-hmm. And you might tell them to save money, and you know, logically it'll make sense, and they'll be like, yeah, I know, but they won't really apply that. And that's where the wisdom comes in, where they'll struggle for a while because they've got all these payments and all this stupid crap that never was a priority. They just at the time thought it was. And then down the road, they'd be like, man, I really should have saved that money to buy the house. And then they've earned that wisdom at that regret phase, you know?
Yeah.
But if you just spoon it over to them, like it's not going to teach them anything. And they're just going to fall in this cycle where now the lesson they've learned is that, well, they can rely on others to bail them out and to earn the things that they want. And that's the bad lesson, right? So, I think that this guy's doing the right thing in my mind. But the flip side of that too is, like, you know, you're saying some frustrations telling the kids for years to save. I don't know how old these kids are. I'm guessing like teenagers, early 20s kind of thing.
Yeah. Well,
something like that.
Between 20 and 30 for sure.
Okay. Well, okay. Depending on their age, at a certain point, I think that our brains are kind of a little bit underdeveloped, and learning some of these lessons is very difficult, if not impossible. And the age is hard to narrow down. It'll depend on, you know, your maturity levels, your experiences. People develop at different rates. But like if I went and talked to a 16-year-old about investing and, you know, saving your money for a down payment and don't buy the new iPhone and don't buy the new video game, I think my odds of success there would be like less than 10%.
Yeah.
Versus speaking to like a 35-year-old adult who's had some experience in life, my odds of success would be like 50-60%.
For sure. And we talked about that before about ourselves. Like, we can go back in time and talk to ourselves. Well, I don't know if I would, can't confidently say I'd listen to myself.
Yeah, I don't think I would.
At a certain age, for sure. Yeah. But it brings me, like, it made me think about my own journey too, right? And I remember being so frustrated when I was in debt, you know, living paycheck to paycheck, not being able to afford stuff. And I was thinking, I used to like go out for a walk and listen to a podcast, whatever. And I would think to myself, like, oh, if I only had like $5,000, or if I only had like $10,000, if someone just gave me that money, I would be okay. But like, I could not have been more wrong.
Yeah. The truth is, if someone gave you that money, you would blow it on the same stupid crap, or you might temporarily clear your debt and then just reaccumulate it.
That's probably what would have happened. Absolutely. Yeah. So like, that's where you say wisdom's earned. Well, like, yeah, okay. I had to dig myself out, and that taught me something. Yeah. Right?
Sabrina and I have had this talk somewhat recently. I won't get into specifics on the situation, but the idea came up of, you know, would you loan somebody some money if they were in a tight spot, like a friend or a family member? And we're talking like more than like $5 here, like a couple grand, let's say. And I said, no, I wouldn't. Like, I would not. And she was sort of kind of like, well, like, you know, what if it was important? And I said, well, no, like, as a general, I mean, you'd have to hear the circumstances out, but as a general rule, I would not lend money out to even a very close friend or direct immediate family member. And the reason is exactly that. If, you know, they have some habits that have very likely gotten them in this situation where they're now short of money and they're asking people for a loan, to the tune of several thousand dollars. And if I gave them that money, well, they're just going to mismanage that money exactly as they've gotten themselves in that position. So, and then we'll both be in this hole where now I'm down a couple grand waiting to get paid back, which I might get it back, I might not. But then it puts us in that relationship in a very awkward spot. And what's more is I've just enabled your lack of knowledge versus, you know, the alternative, what I would suggest is if you come to me, like, let's say it's you come to me and say, Dan, I need $7,000 to get me out of this, whatever. I would say, no, I won't give you $7,000, but I'm more than happy to sit down and talk it out, look at the numbers, help you learn. Like, the education piece, I'll give you all the time in the world, but I will not give you the money. You have to earn that wisdom and learn it. And me giving you the quick fix is going to do the opposite of that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like that saying, right? Teach someone catch someone a fish, you give them a fish to eat or whatever.
Something like that.
And then, or teach them how to fish so they can do it themselves, that's right?
A perfect quote.
Bam, nailed it. Yeah. But, and then it brings me to, like, another thing. Like, my spending habits and strategy has changed dramatically. And, like, I realize that not everybody thinks like that. But I am naturally a spender. I do like spending money. And I was thinking about it. Because, like, there's an acquaintance of mine, a friend of mine, that keeps bringing it up that, hey, like, yeah, you're saving for retirement. You're going to be good in retirement and stuff. But, like, two things that he's mentioned. One, you only live once, okay? And I don't mean that in a meme-y way, but he's genuine about saying that. And he was also saying that, you know, what if you die, basically, before you get to spend the money? You don't get to take it with you, is what he was saying. And, like, common sayings. So I was put some thought into that the last, like, week or so after I heard about it.
What if you die? What if you don't?
No, well, hang on. So yeah, like, I could. Okay, I'm driving up to come see you. It's about an hour drive, right? Today. And I'm like, it's a beautiful day out, and I'm driving my 2012 Honda Civic. And I'm thinking, like, yeah, okay, I could have the, you know, whatever, $60,000 Audi RS3 right now. I could be leveraged to the tits. I could be making payments on everything. Something else that's come up recently is a house has come up on the market that we really like, my wife and I. And we're like, yeah, we could potentially afford it. We could afford the payments. We could do the things, right? But then we would just be strapped. And that's, I've been there to a certain degree, and I don't want to be there again. So, like, I've learned to appreciate the things that I have. So I'm flying up here with my Honda Civic, and I'm listening to tunes. I got the windows open. The fuel gauge is barely moving because it's sipping on fuel. The music sounds good. The car is comfortable. It's good. Gets me to point A, point B. I don't have to worry about it. So, like, yeah, maybe I'm not splurging, but, you know, I've got more than I need to make myself happy, and I just need to appreciate the things that I have, and I've learned to do that. And then to furthermore elaborate on, you know, yeah, exactly. I'm saving for retirement. Now, if I die, yeah, that's going to suck, but I don't know, like, what if I don't? And the majority of people don't die.
That's exactly young. Right. And even if you do die young, well, now you've set up your family, right?
Yeah.
So it's not like it's wasted.
No.
Your family will now be better off, financially speaking, than if you just blew it all and saddled them with debt when you die.
For sure. And I guarantee you, well, I mean, I can't guarantee it, but I very likely that, and if we stay in contact or if we don't, I don't know. And I don't know what this guy, maybe he's, I don't know, whatever. I'm assuming he's not in the same habit as me as saving for retirement. But, like, I feel like, you know, because I don't want to be in a position where I'm going to need to work beyond 65.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be done work, like, max 55 years old. Like, and that doesn't mean that I won't work, but I don't want to be doing my 9-to-5. I don't want to be working full time, at least. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, interestingly, I was thinking about this before coming up with this script, and I jumped on my computer and I jumped on ChatGPT, and I thought, like, what are my timelines? Like, is this realistic? Like, my retirement thought is I'm going to get enough money into investments that are going to pay me dividends, and I'm going to live off the dividends. I'm going to withdraw the dividend instead of reinvesting it, or a portion, and I'm going to live off of them. So I punched in the numbers of what I'm doing in ChatGPT. I said, I'm investing on average $500 a month, and I'm going to do that for the next 20 years. So I'm 35 and I want to retire at 55. And I said, giving me a dividend of average 5% a year, and I reinvest that, what would that look like? And with everything that I currently have, including reinvesting that moving forward, in 20 years, I will have $750. $750?
Man, you should give up now. I'll give you the $750 now. Call it a day.
$750,000 is what I'm going to have. And I'm thinking, like, that's a pretty good number. And then I'm calculating the dividend on that number, because that's where the money's going to be. And I'm like, that's like almost $40,000 in dividends in a year. And if I just did that for a few more years, or if I just were able to squeeze a little more money in my investment, and that's not including capital gain, that's just purely the dividend, basically, and the dividend growth, because I put that in there as well, saying that most of these companies will increase their dividend about 10% a year.
No, I think that's too big of a number.
Too much? Shit. Yeah. Anyway, whatever.
Some will, but I don't think that's safe to say your average will be that.
So, obviously, this is very rough. I did it in, like, 20 minutes. But the point is that I'm going to generate a good portion of wealth, and I could potentially live off of that when I'm 55 and not touch my retirement. So, then that brings me to my pension, and I looked into that, and I have almost $50,000 in my pension account right now of just my money. And if I don't take the money at 55 and I wait till I'm 65, they're going to pay me as of now, like obviously this will change in 20 years, they're going to pay me about $3,800 or $3,900 a month.
Where?
In retirement from my pension.
Assuming everything keeps going the way it's going?
Yeah, assuming everything. And then they adjust, you know, obviously again 20 years from now it's going to look a little different, but they, because they've already adjusted their payouts and stuff.
Yeah.
But like, you know, just look at today's numbers. That's a pretty solid number. So...
Yeah, and that's the beauty of having a pension. I mean, we're lucky. Not everybody has that. But, like, your, like, investment amount doesn't need to be that big. Like, imagine your total investment income in retirement is, like, $1,000 a month, which I think is super attainable considering you're starting now. Imagine you're pulling $1,000 a month on top of your pension, on top of your CPP, on top of your OAS, and hopefully on top of your no debt because your mortgage is paid off. Like, $1,000 extra a month, you're living like a king with all that other stuff, right? Now imagine that number is $2,000 extra, $3,000. Like, these aren't unrealistic numbers considering you've started so early, right?
Yeah, that's true. Like, my, the $750,000 gives me a $37,000 a year dividend payment, but and that's that, way more than $1,000 a month.
Yeah, and there'll be taxes and stuff too, because not all of that will likely be sheltered. But still, like, the point is, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, so like I was saying, like, you know, I could splurge, I could buy all the things now, but it's, I don't have time to do anything right now anyway, you know, like, even if I had all the toys, like.
Well, I find this, like, you only live once argument to be invalid when comparing against us. It's like, you only live once, like, this is like, this person's imagining, like, this binary, like, either, like, you're doing everything or you're doing nothing, like, that's, they're imagining that situation. That's not at all true.
No.
Like, if somebody came up to me and was like, well, Dan, you only live once. Okay. But to me, it's like, what is that person who's YOLOing really getting more out of their life than I am? Like, what are you doing that I'm not doing that is so valuable? And the answer would probably be like, well, I got this nice truck. Okay, but I like my car, so I don't care about your truck. Like, I'm happy for you, but to me, there's no value in that for me. You know what I mean? Like, that's not a thing that I'm going to blow my entire future over.
And I can give you a really real thing for me. So, like, I bought a snowmobile. I really enjoyed my snowmobile. But then I got this whole, like, thing, like, I need a new snowmobile. And, like, I bought the new snowmobile, went into debt to do it. And, like, sure, it was cool for, I don't know, let's say, if I really think about it, it was 6 months cool. And then after that, it was regret and anger and... not fun anymore because I couldn't afford it. Now, even if you could afford it, I find you buy the thing and the thing becomes less exciting after a period of time, whatever that is.
Dopamine wearing off.
Right? So, like, yeah, you get the new car, it's cool, but then after a year or two, like, is that still cool? That, like, was it worth all that much to you?
Yeah, I think the people who, like, need that dopamine hit, like, every, like, year or two or whatever, like, I think you need to practice a little bit of, like, some of that monk stuff, you know, that, like, appreciation and gratefulness.
Yeah.
Like, I still get in my car, my 2008 Acura, and I drive it to work and I'll, like, have the windows down, the tunes blasted. I think, this is a nice car. This thing rides nice. Like, I truly appreciate it. And by appreciating my car for what it is and for the privilege that it is to drive it, I'm not thinking about buying that $60,000 or $70,000 car to replace it. I still think those cars are super cool.
Yeah.
But not enough for me to, you know, like, it's not... I have other priorities in life, and I just practice gratefulness with my own car. And I appreciate it, and I think it's amazing.
Yeah, and, like, going back to appreciating things that we have, right? And that includes, like, the position that I'm in my life right now. Like, I am not rich by any means, but I am definitely in a much different position. So, like, I'll give you a quick, realistic, weird example. I went into the gas station today, and I was like, I want to try some BioSteel and get some Rockstars. Like, there would be a time in my life where I bought those things for whatever it was, $15, and I'd be like, well, how am I going to pay for this? And I'd have instant regret. Another example would be, like, my son's hockey. Like, he's gotten really into hockey, and, like, additional outside of the regular season expenses have come up, and I didn't go, oh, shit, how am I going to pay for this? You know, I just went, like, cool, dumb, my son, do you want to do this? Yeah, let's do it. Cool. You know? No second guess. I had room in the budget, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
being in that position opens up opportunities for, like, right there was a direct opportunity for your son. Like, he's now going to be a better hockey player, and he's going to have fun doing it because he really likes it. And he's going to be a better hockey player for it because he has more time, right? So, like, that's just one example of an opportunity. you know, I get it. Not every kid's going to grow up to play in the NHL, and your kid probably won't. Maybe, you never know, but probably won't. But that's just one example. Like, down the road, maybe there's an opportunity for some kind of summer camp or some kind of college program or some extracurricular thing that will be very valuable in life, right? And and all it just you being in a position to enable these opportunities to occur, that's super valuable for your kid, right? Not every kid has that advantage.
Yeah, and I mean, like, that's great. I'm, like, really happy to be able to provide for my family and not have any worry or regret, but, like, it also adds so much value and relieves so much stress in my own life because, like, I have my we have our finances managed enough now that, like, we can afford these additional expenses, even though they aren't $1 million expenses, but, like, but then I flip the coin back to, I could buy the sweet car and I could go get this crazy house, you know, and all this stuff that I don't need that will bring me joy for maybe a few years. But then I wouldn't be able to do any of these extra things at all. Then I'd be so strapped that I'd be worried about, well, you know what? I can't buy the BioSteel drink. I can't, you know, afford extra hockey for my son. Things would be different, you know, and like, mm-hmm. I much rather the position that I'm in now. Like, sure, I'm not splurging and buying the latest and greatest whatever, but like, I'm recognizing the value in things now. I don't know where I'm going with this, but that's my spiel.
Well, I think that's important to recognize the value in things. We talk about that a lot, right? Getting the value out of your dollar. And a lot of people just don't weigh that. They don't weigh the value of things. And that's like, super important skill, tactic, whatever you want to call it. But I think more people should practice that at least a little bit for the bigger expenses to start. But no, like, I've done that too. Like, just recently I bought this $30 pair of sunglasses from Costco. Like, that was a prime example because I keep losing and breaking my sunglasses, and I always buy the expensive, you know, $150, $200 pair. And it's starting to get ridiculous how rough I am on them, how much I lose them. So I went and bought, I literally saw these $30 sunglasses, and I'd recently lost a pair, and I thought I could use a nice driving pair. And I saw this $30 set, and I wanted to buy it as just one to leave in the car. And I thought, no, I'd better sleep on this. Like, weighing the value of this 30, because I had another pair of sunglasses, you know. So anyways, I came back the next, like a week later, I came back with Sabrina and I got the green light from the CFO. So so I bought them. But like, some people would just not think twice about a $30 purchase. They'd be like, who cares? It's $30.
Yeah.
And you know what? You're probably right. For $30 for many people is nothing. But if you do that, you know, many, many times throughout the week, throughout the month, throughout the year, that adds up, man. Like, that $30 here, $30 there, that becomes significant. And you practice that with the smaller expenses, then you're more likely to practice it for the larger expenses as well.
Yep. And that lines us up really well for the next podcast episode, because that's part of what we're talking about and part of what Mel had more additions to add to, more to say, she said. So if you've got nothing else to add, I think we're going to wrap up this episode.
Sure.
Sweet. Well, we appreciate you guys listening. Don't forget to like, subscribe, follow. And we'll see you on the next one.
Yep.
Cheers.
See ya.